everybody. Eve Harrow on Rejuvenation for the Land of Visual Network. And I am very, very honored to have on the line Dr. Shmuel, Professor and Dr. Shmuel Achituv, Professor Emeritus of the Department of Bible Archaeology and Ancient Near Eastern Studies at Ben-Gurion University in Beersheba, and also an Israel Prize winner among his many, many accomplishments. So, Professor Achituv, thank you so much for joining me.
Morning.
I asked you to join me to talk about the Jerusalem Papyrus, the new find, or the older find that has just now come out. So can you tell my audience why this is such an exciting find and why it's been in the headlines now for quite a few days?
We have at hand only three papyri from the both sides of the Jordan. And it's very unique because organic material doesn't endure in the climate, the humid climate of Israel, only in the Judean desert and the Jordan Valley we can find the organic materials that don't decay. So we have only three papyri till now. One from Wadi Murabat near the Dead Sea, another from the other side of the Jordan, a Moabite one, and this new papyrus. And the papyrus is important for being one of three only, and then because it mentions Jerusalem, it's only a dispatch who went with commodities, with wine, sent from the vicinity of Jericho, an amount of two jars, not bottles, but two jars of wine, sent from a lady. She was a female servant of the king. Female servant is not a slave. She is a functionary of the state, and we don't know if she was a tax collector, if she was a manager of estates of the king near Jericho in the Jordan Valley, which is arid, but it have enough water, not from the rain, but from springs that come from the hills. And we know that there were estates of kings in the first temple period and the second temple periods that grow many growths of dates, palm dates, and also of other trees, orchards, and so on, and of course of wine. The wine there, because of the hot weather. Have a lot of sugar and then a lot of alcohol, and it was kept its value for a longer time than most wines.
For my listener, first of all, it's a very nice coincidence. We're going to be talking. Jericho is the city, of course, that the Israelites, when we come in after Moses has died, and we come in with Joshua. So that's the first city that is conquered. And for those of my listeners who are not familiar with the layout of the Land of Israel, Jericho is down the hill from Jerusalem. That sounds, it's actually a little more complicated than that. It's quite a hill. But also, as the professor said, supplied, because it's an oasis with springs, supplied food to the city, and therefore also a lot of priests lived there to supply their cousins and brothers who are working in the temple with food. Till this day, it's the city of palms. I was just down there last week, and you can see many, many palm trees there. But I'm a little bit fascinated about the idea of the women's role in this. I had interviewed about a year and a half ago Carol Myers, who wrote a book, Discovering Eve, about ancient Israelite women in context. Was that a surprise for the archaeologist to to find that this would have been this, that this papyrus, that this papyrus, in addition to talking about Jerusalem, which is what's really in the headlines, Jerusalem in writing from so long ago on a papyrus, that there was a woman as a functionary, as involved in the business world, if you will, or in the world of the kings, or that's something that has already been very well documented?
Well, it wasn't documented because women were, let's say, property of the family. They passed from the father to the husband. But there were special women, strong women, strong-willed women, who were, let's say, great women. Like, we have a story about the women who, from Shunem, which in the valley of Jezreel, and she hospitalized Eliza.
Right.
Yeah, and she's called
Elijah the prophet.
Isha Gdol.
Right.
Yeah, and she called Isha Gdola, a great woman. And she is prominent in the story more than her husband. When she went to the Carmel mountain to visit Elijah, her husband, they asked her, "Why you are going? It's not a Shabbat, it's not a holiday." And she said, "Goodbye." And she went on.
So Jewish women have been independent for quite a while.
That's good. Yes.
No, but the period of this, of the Bible, of the First Temple period, which is your expertise. So when did you find out about this papyrus, you personally?
Personally, the papyri surfaced 3.5 years ago. I was called to check it. I saw it's only a photo made by a cellular phone, not the best, a good one. But I could say to the man who called me to check it, and I said, "Well, it looks nice."
Okay, there's potential here. Okay.
Yeah. And then it went on, and I saw the papyrus itself. I handled it. It was very brittle and in two pieces. One piece contains two lines, and the other one was blank. It was folded like an envelope. And then we had good photos, and we can read it. It's written very nice in a cursive, fluent writing.
So, when you did you immediately recognize the word Jerusalem in ancient Hebrew?
Yes, the last word on the papyrus is to Jerusalem.
Wow.
In one word.
Wow! Can you describe for us what that felt like when you saw that?
I was excited because I deciphered the inscription, which is very simple one, just a note accompanying a shipment of two jars of wine to Jerusalem. And they say it's sent by, well, we don't know the name is lost. And it was another line, an upper line, who didn't survive the elements, and there is only some ages, some tales of letters who crept into the second line. But we can read it from the servant of the king to jars of wine to Jerusalem. In Hebrew, to Jerusalem is one word, Yerushalem. To Jerusalem.
Do we have any idea who the king was that they would be referring to? Are you able to date it to more exactly to a year? To a decade?
Yeah, to half a century, about half a century. You can't do more. The carbon 14 tests ascribe it to the between 600 to 800, and then we can minimize by paleography the forms of the letters to the end of the second half of the 7th century. Let's see, somewhere around 600 BC.
Wow. Just before the destruction.
That will be the, and this will be around the reign of Josiah.
Wow. That is, I mean, I get the shivers. It's just an unbelievable find. But you said the first time you saw it was 3.5 years ago. So what took so long for it to be publicized? Because, of course, now there's all this chatter that it only came out now because of the UNESCO thing, and we're trying to prove that Jerusalem was once Jewish. How do you see all this?
Look here. That's a matter of the Israel Antiquities Authority to give permission to publish it. He was holding it in a secret for anyone. Only my wife knew about it.
Wow.
And it was kept in the Israel Museum, in the laboratories of the IAA, Israel Authority, Antiquities Authority, to preserve it in a good condition, to make photos, to check the papyrus.
To make sure it's not a forgery, I imagine you go through all kinds of different testing.
Yes. I'm certain about it that this is unique.
So again, so what? Why 3 years? Wouldn't they want to right away tell everybody? Why wait?
That's a policy. That's another policy of the IAA.
Uh-huh. They like keeping their secrets. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So, I mean, but in terms of, you know, that this whole thing only came out now because Jerusalem is on the world's agenda, but the conference yesterday, right, was already announced a while ago that there was going to be an exciting...
No, it's 7 months ago.
Yeah.
It was decided that it will be it's the yearly conference about the new finding, new research in Jerusalem and in the environment.
You know, it occurs to me also when I, as a tour guide, I take people also around Jerusalem. And one of the things that I always point out to them from the City of David looking across the Kidron Valley is a burial tomb that had written on top of it, and I'm paraphrasing, "Whoever steals from this tomb shall be cursed." And what I find so interesting about that, first of all, nobody listened because the tomb was empty when we found it, the burial cave. But the fact that one would expect that even a grave robber would be literate. You're not going to write something if you think nobody's going to be able to read it. So in terms of literacy in the biblical period, do you feel that most people or many people were able to read more than, let's say, in the general world?
I don't know exactly. Okay, we can sure to make sure that in Israel and perhaps in Phoenicia also more people knew to write and read to a certain amount than in Egypt or in Mesopotamia, because the system of the 22 characters of the Hebrew and Phoenician alphabet is simpler to master if a man begins a child to read, to learn, he can master it. But I don't believe that most of people knew were literate. But a big minority, let's say, even half of the males knew to write at least their names and some rudimentary they knew. Then you have a lot of clerks and a robber who came to the rob a tomb doesn't care what's written about.
Right, he's not going to listen to the sign anyway. So I don't want to keep you. Just one more. It's not such a small topic.
Yeah.
This was not found in like a regular dig, was it? It was part of there are people who regularly raid the antiquities. I know it's a very, very big problem that we have here in Israel. Robbers for financial reasons to steal things. This was found in that context as well, where someone had already taken it out of where it had been, and you didn't find it in situ, as they say?
Yeah, they didn't find it in situ. It came out from the robbers, and we don't know exactly where it found. Department in the Israel Antiquities Authority have some guesses about it, mm-hmm. I guess, but we don't know.
Right, look because here, then everybody would go there and look for other, maybe.
Yeah. They are looking for it.
I'm sure they are. That's a very big issue that we have, I guess, all over the Middle East, but here in Israel also, is being able to find things where they were left. Okay, Professor Achituv, thank you so much for giving me
You're
of
welcome.
Your time. And I hope that they are. I have a feeling you've got some more secrets.
There are more secrets about it. Yeah.
Maybe I should talk to your wife. But I hope that those secrets do come to light and you have permission to speak about them in the near future, because it is so exciting. People tend to think of archaeology as so boring, but it is so not boring,
not
and
boring.
So very exciting.
It's very interesting and thrilling.
Yeah, really, absolutely thrilling. Okay, thank you so, so much. And thank you, everybody, for listening. Eve Harrow on Rejuvenation for the Land of Israel Network. And we always have so many exciting things happening from this very old and very new country of ours. Take care. Goodbye, everybody, for now.
Founded in 1902, World Mizrahi is a global, Torah-driven, community-focused educational organization committed to Jewish identity and destiny. The Land of Israel Network is powered by the Mizrahi World Movement.
Hi, this is Eve Harrow, host of Rejuvenation on the Land of Israel Network. You can hear a new show from me every Sunday, and every day of the week, shows from another one of my very talented fellow show hosts. Reach me, Eve, at thelandofisrael.com, and keep listening, everybody. We love your feedback. The Land of Israel, coming at you every day, every week. That's the Land of Israel Network on thelandofisrael.com.